The Book of Revelation, chapter 4. Chapter 4, verse 1. After this I looked, and behold, a door was opened in heaven. And the first voice which I heard was as it were of a trumpet talking with me, which said, Come up hither, and I will show thee things which must be hereafter. And immediately I was in the Spirit, and behold, a throne was set in heaven, and one sat on the throne. As we recall in the first chapter, John had a vision of Christ, and he saw him, his countenance lit up, his hair white as snow, his feet like fine brass, girt about the paps with a golden girdle, in his hands seven stars and seven golden candlesticks around him. The seven candlesticks being the seven churches, the seven stars being the angel of the churches. And so that vision proceeds from chapter 1 to chapter 2 and chapter 3. Now we're talking about a new vision. He's going to have a separate set of visions here. After that, he looks and he sees a door open in heaven. So he looks up and he sees this opening in heaven. I can only assume he means the sky, which opened into another realm, to the realm of the heavenly. And he sees a cross into another dimension. Or, I mean, that's one way of looking at it, or you could just look at it as purely visionary. I see John here back on the Isle of Patmos, and he is again taken into the Spirit. So this is another occasion, you know, in verse 2 it says he is in the Spirit. So this is another occasion where he is now having visions in the Spirit. He's seeing things. He's being shown things by God. This loud, unmistakable voice, as a trumpet, clear, piercing, is talking with him and says, Yes, come up here, and I will show thee things which must be hereafter. That's a verse that people use to support the idea that, well, that's when the church leaves the earth. It doesn't make any sense. He's talking to John. The voice says to John, You come up here. I think the true irony is that when the two witnesses are slain, the voice comes out of heaven and tells them to come up hither, because that's the moment everyone's really been waiting for. The call up into the sky occurs when the two witnesses rise. Just as Paul said in 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, the living shall not prevent them which are asleep, meaning the people who are alive cannot rise from the dead before the dead in Christ rise. Everything in the resurrection has an order, and I talk about this in my paper on death and the resurrection, which I called I Believe in Death and the Resurrection of the Dead. It has an order. You can't have people being transfigured, living people being transfigured into a spiritual body wholesale, meaning the whole, all of Christianity, and then have more people die to be raised from the dead later. The living do not precede the dead. The dead in Christ rise first. First. I mean, you can start complicating things by adding multiple resurrections, but then the whole they rise first at the last trump, all these indicators of time, all these indicators of particular order become meaningless. And what you're doing is you're reading into the scriptures a particular view and causing the scriptures to bend to your view, as opposed to just letting the scriptures dictate to us what we ought to believe. So this is not talking about the rapture. John is taken into the Spirit for prophetic purposes. Is it like the rapture? Was he transfigured? Could be. But that does not mean that this means, though, that's the timing of the rapture. If that's the timing of the rapture, John was in Patmos, see. That was 1,900 years ago. A little more than that. That was, you know, not quite 2,000 years ago. This happened to John. That's the order that this happened in. Come up hither. But to say, as some do, that chapter 4, verse 1 indicates that the rapture happens and then the church is just gone, and the rest of the book of Revelation, there's no church. That's not true. The church is the candlesticks. We shall meet the Lord in the air, but at the appointed time. As far as chronology goes, I do think that it is significant when he says, must be hereafter. Because, as I said, when they call themselves a church, they are being judged as a church through chapter 3. But when we get to the later chapters, we see the churches have been removed from their place. So I see chapter 2 and 3 as pre-existing conditions. leading into the end times.
Most of the things described in Revelation are after the churches have had their candlesticks removed out of their place. When that is exactly, I do not know. It is not described, but it is hereafter.
Truthfully, you can take lessons from those churches at any time, as we can take lessons from all kinds of things we read in Revelation at any time.
Or any part of the Bible, the applicability is much broader than just the narrow confines of the context in which you find these things described. If that which was written concerning the Israelites in the wilderness was written for our admonition, as 1 Corinthians chapter 10 says, then so also that which is written about the church in the future is also written for our admonition now, so that we might take heed that we will not do what they shall do, that we can avoid their fate. Just as we can look to the past to get lessons, we can also look to the future. That which is written of the future can also instruct us. Okay, moving on.
John sees the throne. There's a throne in heaven, and someone is sitting on it. That's something that we as humans are not quite conscious of as we ought to be. That there is a throne in heaven, and someone is sitting on it. There's someone sitting on the throne. I remember one time I was on a website talking with people who didn't believe, and they were saying, do you think God has a literal rear end and sits on a literal chair? And I said, well, I don't know that it matters, because the symbology of such a thing is unmistakable. He is on his throne. You know, he is in charge. He is enthroned. The question would be, are these anthropomorphisms, meaning we're portraying God as a man so that man can understand God? To some degree, no doubt. I mean, does God need to sit on a throne? Like, all right, I'll take physical form and sit down on this chair with all this stuff on it, fancy chair.
Because it gratifies me to sit on a jewel-encrusted chair, something that makes me feel good. The heaven is my throne, and the earth is my footstool. That's what the Lord said in Isaiah 66. Where is the house that you would build unto me? Where is the chair that the craftsman could craft for me? I sit enthroned in heaven. That is my throne. So is it not more likely that these things are portrayed in this way for the benefit of man, so that we could see God in a way that we understand that he is in charge? Man gives honor and prestige to his rulers by setting them on thrones and putting golden crowns on their heads.